I didn't watch the entire Derby. Just going to confess that right now. I actually saw a good chunk of the ending. I was doing a little late night Peloton, and I went, hey, you know, I'll fire this on. All right, I'll throw it on. And the part I saw was Teoscar Hernandez win. Awesome. Our guy, right? Should have been basically new Edwin Encarnacion. And I was happy for Teoscar. And then I saw Vladimir Guerrero Jr. running around in Teo's jersey. And I went, that's cool that those guys are friends. And I was happy for Teo. I am happy for Teo. He's on this Dodgers team that's trying to win a World Series, right? Him and Kevin Biggio and maybe someday Bo Bichette. All three of those guys going to be going for a World Series ring with the LA Dodgers. And as happy as I am for Teoscar Hernandez, I'll never get over how dumb that one was. The Jays, it's funny that Shapiro and Atkins came into this job, and one of the first things they did was let Edwin Encarnacion go. And they tried to replace him with Kendrys Morales, famously. And at the time, people were really stoked on that move because they went, well, they got a compensatory draft pick, and it turned out to be Nate Pearson. And as we know, we've had all these wonderful Nate Pearson moments that have completely justified losing a franchise legend for the last couple of years of his prime. It's the same thing with Teo. Imagine what this team would have been with Teoscar Hernandez as their DH. And I got me kind of thinking, watching him just, you know, crush baseballs, and who cares about home run derby? I don't feel like, oh, it could have been our home run derby. Like, Vlad won one. I could not tell you what year it was. I think he has a record, and I don't care. Home run derby, it looks really fun for some of the people that are there. I think it's super cool to cheer for the hometown guy like they did for Bobby Witt Jr. last night. But overall, it's like a television product or something that out of all the skills competitions, it's dead last for me. I just can't do it. It's just not. It's not for me. It's not for me. Well, if you want me to go see BP, I'll go watch BP. I think that's great live. But yeah, watching the Derby on TV, not for me. But seeing a guy that the city loved, who Vladdy loved that deeply, man, that would have been cool. It would have been cool to keep that guy. And I just thought, you know, maybe this is what ends up being kind of bookended with Ross Atkins, is that he ends up blowing two different DH legends that this place should have had, with two guys finishing their careers here in both Edwin Encarnacion and Teoscar Hernandez. Never been able to really get it right since. Obviously, we all really enjoyed Canada Soccer's ride. I can't have Sid on the show live because he's finishing BT right across from me. So I spoke to him yesterday. And, of course, we did a Canada Soccer State of the Union. Here it is. Sid Sixero.
Okay, let's start with this. You called this tournament gravy, right? That was the thing. I had you on. We set it up. You went, this is gravy. You were feeling good. You liked what we saw in the France friendly. You mentioned that Chile was a really strong side and that it was going to be really difficult for them to come out of the group. But, man, if they could just do it, gravy, gravy, gravy. Man, they made it to the final game and they outplay Uruguay. I am kind of curious how much you think this now moving forward moves that gravy feeling. Like, how much you're actually going to be expecting from these guys when they move forward into the World Cup.
It is gravy, but it's like it's all of a sudden turned into poutine gravy.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Like it's a different type of gravy.
It's
right?
Amazing gravy.
It's that gravy where if you had it on poutine, or that gravy when in high school you just ordered the fries.
Yes.
And the calves.
Yeah.
And it was like the best thing you ate all day.
You know what it is? Like, you know what gravy? You know, you ever go to a wedding that does poutine and you're drunk and it's like midnight? And you're starving.
Gravy.
And it's drunk gravy. And you're like, it's warm. And you're like, oh my God, all I've been doing is drinking cold drink. And now I have drunk gravy all over my expensive shirt. This is so good. And I don't care because the gravy is so good. It's so worth it.
And that person you've been talking to all night, like, sees you eating this gravy in a disgusting way. And it just, everything crumbles that you've tried to accomplish, and you don't care because this is the new thing that I need to focus on in my life.
I need more gravy. I need more gravy.
Yes, I need more gravy. So it's gravy, but like better gravy is where I'm taking it. It's the best gravy. Look, I think the great thing about what just happened for Canada is, to me, we have other guys that can get stuff done.
Yeah, man.
And I was worried for a long, long time that that wasn't the case. Look, am I still thrilled with Jonathan David's tournament? No. Do I like how Alfonso Davies looked the other night coming on? Not really. He didn't look healthy to me. Like, I think, like, that penalty he took in the shootout against Uruguay, that was an unserious penalty. Like, I don't know if he was healthy enough to actually kick. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I don't know what he was doing out there if he wasn't healthy. Anyway, we can get into that later. The other guys, this is a way deeper program than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Way deeper program than I thought. And the beauty of Jesse Marsh is there are young players here who've only experienced MLS, who have busted through the door and had global scouts just watch them for 2 weeks. He can still mold, and he has their attention. And I wasn't expecting is finding a deep roster. I was not I just wanted them to gel together. I didn't realize Bombito was that guy.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that Marseille just had the buy of the summer with Ishmael Kone. I didn't there were things that surprised Schaffelberg. As much as I love the story, I still wasn't overly convinced he was that guy. But he is just, he runs into everything. And he's phenomenal. So I feel very good about this. And unfortunately, there's not a thing next year. Well, there's a Gold Cup, I believe. There is something next summer, I think. I love what just happened here. Yeah. And even if they would have gone out in the group stage that way, where it was super tight, and I mean, we could pick at some things. There are some positives here. But I feel good. This is better than normal gravy. This is drunk poutine gravy.
No, it's honestly, we're bombed here. bombed at the table, being like doing the thing where we're both eating it and looking at each other and just doing the, like, you know, when you're eating and you're like and you're like nodding your head at the other person because you're like so in sync on exactly what's happening here. That's what's going on right now with you and I watching this. And so that's what I have here is like the lasting takeaway is that this was a tournament about development, and it really does feel like, holy crap, there is just real potential for development here. There is a program that is much deeper, and some of those young guys, and I have that written down, is Kone, Schaffelberg, and Bombito. Out of those three guys, who are you most excited about moving forward?
Kone.
Yeah.
Kone.
Yeah, I think that was, I wrote that, by the way, before the Uruguay game.
And the beauty is, like, I'm upset Uruguay didn't have half the roster suspended for that game Saturday.
Yeah.
Because they should have been. And I'm not saying I wouldn't have gone to the crowd either.
I can't believe that the Copa guys blew something. That's really crazy.
It's weird. It's odd how the Copa boardroom.
Dude, they were doing so great. And then all of a sudden they made that one little tiny mistake. You really don't want to point that out because they were flawless the entire thing. So, yeah. But outside of that, the non-suspensions, pretty flawless performance for all of them. So let's just ignore it.
The craziest part is, and I learned this through Marcelo Bielsa, the coach of Uruguay, in his 8-minute diatribe on Friday, was Bolivia literally said to them, "We can't practice," and they're like, "We don't care." we don't care if you can't, like, I mean, you just deal with it. Yeah. Go find a parking lot somewhere outside of a Applebee's or something. Yeah. Like, figure it out.
Yeah.
It was Kone. Kone is exciting me because Uruguay played a real team Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And in their midfield is Valverde of Real Madrid. He is legit, okay? He is one of the silent cogs of that engine at Real Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
And Kone ran circles around this guy. Like, it was a joke. It was an absolute – Kone's first half was Zidane-esque. With the goal, he had more passes than anyone completed. He had more. He broke up more plays than anyone else. It was a masterclass.
Mm-hmm.
Kone is going to be way more important here than I thought. Way more important. And if he can drive that midfield, and clearly he's got the offensive touch, mm-hmm. obviously, that's a game changer. Because I think we have some central mids. Eustáquio and guys can handle themselves. We were missing a driver of the midfield offensively,
mm-hmm.
up the middle, not wide, up the middle. And I think they got it. And that test Saturday, that was a real game against real midfielders. He was in his own world out there doing anything he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I wasn't ready for that. I was not ready for that. Canada's got a real one here in Coy.
So, again, I like to do the test of would a guy stand out to someone who's never seen the sport before, right? Like, if you sat down with them and you go, oh, yeah, like, that's the guy, right? And it's easier in some sports rather than others, right? Like, I would say basketball is the easiest one. But it's like the Connor McDavid test, I should almost call it, where it's like, watch all these hockey players, and you probably couldn't pick too many of them apart from one another. But when Connor McDavid steps on the ice, you could be watching the sport for 10 seconds, and you'd be like, oh, that guy's, like, way different than everybody else. And I thought Kone in that game was, like, doing the Connor McDavid test, where you could have sat down me, a casual, and I would go, oh, wow, he, like, really pops. This guy really pops. He really stands out. And to your point, it was in a game with players of that ilk. And one thing I did want to ask you about that Uruguay game is how much are you taking away from it? Because, like, yeah, they blow the lead, but that's not the story of the game. The story of the game was that they outplayed a top 15 country that fielded a real roster. And I want to ask you, like, yeah, how did you view Uruguay in that contest? Like, is that a team that wasn't taking Canada seriously? Because it's hard not to look at that and go, holy crap, if you can do that against them, what can you be?
Oh, no, they were taking the game seriously.
That's what I mean. Okay.
The roster alone says they were taking the game seriously. Like in any other world, Darwin Nunez of Liverpool, Valverde of Real Madrid, like, he sits all those guys. But he didn't do it. You know, clearly, that honestly, given how frustrated both nations were at the organization of the tournament, that was one of the best third-place games I've ever seen.
It was so entertaining.
Like, World Cup, Copa, like, the World Cup has a legendary third-place game. They've always had the third-place game. But I've never seen something that intense with that level of skill offensively. It was kind of crazy. So, yeah, no, I take a lot from that game. I take a lot from that game. And the fact that, like, we're starting an 18-year-old at center back in the Fugarol, this is big time experience. The kid picked up a yellow card within the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And he stayed on, he didn't get sent off. Like, that's a win.
Yeah.
I don't know what Fulham are doing with this kid. They got to play him. Mm-hmm. So, I there's so many positives. Like, so many positives. And again, I don't love. If Davies wasn't ready to play, I don't love throwing him out there. I didn't like that at all because he didn't look right. Past that, you know, there's a passion here. There's a pride here. And I think we've developed some good habits in this tournament.
Yeah,
I really do. And just even the speech Marsh gave on the field after that the cameras kind of picked up. Love that stuff.
Yeah,
absolutely love that stuff. There was no. There was this, like, none of this positivity is manufactured. Like, that's my favorite. That's my biggest point going away from the tournament.
Dude,
everything's tangible. Everything's real. Everything is, this isn't Canadian blind optimism from people that don't watch the game at all. This is like we're all seeing the same thing.
You nailed
all of
it.
Us. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I already miss all the soccer. Like, it's weird today. I feel weird.
No, I absolutely miss it. It sucks. You go, this is the only, this feels very much like when you're watching that first full weekend of March Madness where you get Thursday until Sunday and it's just jam packed and your brain is just like, oh my God, I've gambled on a million things and I've sat in the bar for 4 days and I've been with friends texting bets and watching these high intense college games where it's buzzer beaters and these huge calls. And then all of a sudden Monday comes and you're like, when time is the basketball game? And they're like, there will be no game. And you're like, that's not right. I can't go back to this.
I don't like this.
No, I don't. I do not like it. They're like, don't worry, the home run derby's tonight. I'm like, I cannot think of a thing that I could. Like, I'm going to die from the bends, from decompress. Like, just the change in elevation of the stakes of that Canadian soccer game and watching, the Euro final yesterday to home run derby with, I don't even know who's in it. I couldn't care less.
Know who's in it.
No,
God bless the home run derby. I know Vladdy's not in it. That's what I know.
One of my good buddies texted me, like, hey, the home run derby changed the format. And I looked at that text with, like, disdain, as though he'd asked me He'd ask me to like single-handedly go move his house into a truck. I was like, how dare you text me, a sports guy, a sports thing like that during this time? No, I'm with you, man.
You had to clean your phone after that text.
No, it was disgusting. I don't know if our friendship will be the same after that. I'm telling you, though, that the part you nailed there was the authenticity of Marsh when he spoke to the group and about the group. Is you and I have watched a billion, the most amount of sports humans can consume, we're there. Like, we are in that tier. People can disagree with our sports opinions. They can think that we're idiots. They can think that we don't know something about, you know, strategy or playing at the highest level. They're probably right on most of those things. One thing you can never tell guys like us is when a coach speaking about a team or a player speaking about a program, when they're not being authentic, right? That was real. When he was talking about him having the most fun and him just being blown away by the players on this team, like, I think Marsh is very surprised or was very surprised by what he had. Like, I'm not sure he fully knew when he was walking in this program, like, the stuff that you're saying where you're like, holy crap, Kone versus Uruguay. I don't think that he knew that. I don't think that he knew that what he was going to have in Bombito. And now he's sort of looking at it going, holy crap, I took this job and I was happy to get one, of course. I'm Jesse Marsh. But now I'm looking at this going, this is a game changer. Like, this is really, like, I stumbled into a real thing.
Oh, 100%. Well, I mean, let's lay it. I think you're a fan of laying one roster over another.
Yeah.
Let's do that with Canada and USA right now.
We're better. And the rankings say we're better too.
It's not even close.
And we also beat them, they beat us last, but still, we've beat them, we're right there with them.
We beat them when it mattered in qualifying, 100%.
Yeah, exactly.
100%. They can have their Nations League. Congratulations.
Sure.
Go ahead. You got embarrassed at home in this tournament, but that's fine. You got a Nations League. I would take Bombito over any of their guys right now. Cornelius is about to bust out.
Dude, Cornelius is amazing. I was like, why didn't we talk about him more? He's 26.
He came on as a sub, and he's like, I'm blocking everything.
Yeah.
And you're not going to be able to do anything about it. I will get in front of all of your stuff, and because I'm Derek Cornelius, and you're not. Like,
yeah.
Again, these are all guys who, like, some of them are on the verge of something big here. But I do love, like, I also got to give some love to, like, Alistair Johnston and guys who just played all the time and were pretty consistent. And you need that. You need those kind of, those pillar dudes. I got nothing but positives, and that's not me.
Yeah.
But I felt it was amazing to watch. It was amazing how Canada got to see it. And, you know, without getting to the finer details, there were some pros on that broadcast. And I think the sport it was a strong month for Canadian soccer. Strong month. And hopefully our women's team can go into Paris and defend, and that's going to be amazing to watch too. So it's nothing but good vibes right now, man. And amazingly, life continues without John Herdman. Amazingly, life continues without John Herdman. Wow.
I got to tell you, when it comes to fumbling the bag on this, like trying to threaten with a job for what, like Australia's women's team? Or sorry, New Zealand's.
It was a New Zealand men's team.
It was men?
Yeah.
Okay, I
believe it was the men. Yeah.
Whatever.
I believe it was the men.
That threat to go into the team, and I am going to talk to you about this a little bit, but the team that loses with a $28 million payroll divide to Forge FC, which, you know, like, if you want the takeaways for this tournament, again, about development and about really trying to create a different soccer culture in this country, Jesse Marsh kind of nailed it again when he and I think it was Stacchio, too, that went out and basically pleaded that we needed to develop better at a younger age and get these guys in more meaningful games earlier and learn.
CPL got a lot of talk at the end of that stretch. And I know Jesse...
Perfectly timed win.
I had family at the Ford game last night. I know Jesse Marsh was in Hamilton last night.
Yeah.
It's like, this is, you know, I'm now... I'll be watching a bit more One Soccer here, too. I'm going to watch some CPL this summer. I haven't done that as much.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's time. You know, I think this is something. And also the last guy, and I don't know where you want to take it after, but Kevin Blue of Canada Soccer, who just got
this
job,
mm-hmm.
he has steadied the damn ship, man. Like, we still have work to do. We have a lot of work to do. But this money's nice coming from this Copa America for the coffers. We have a manager who's committed, who wants to stick it to the States as much as we do. Like, I have to give him a ton of credit in a short amount of time. It's worked out. it's really worked out. And if his vision is anything like this, I think this was a really smart move. And it's just, sometimes you just need some organized people in positions of power who kind of know what they're doing. And so far, so good.
Dude, this is it. This is why it's like so overwhelmingly positive is after the World Cup, you and I had spoken a few times. It really did feel like things were sort of coming apart at the seams. And all of a sudden you mentioned this guy, Kevin Blue, and the stabilizing of the ship, and feels like they hit on a manager. And we'll see, like, when we move forward. Like, I had like a couple fans reach out to me and be like, don't be fooled by Jesse Marsh. Like, this is what he does. He comes in and he's rah-rah and he's great. But then tactically, it starts to fall apart. And I was like, fine, if it ever gets to that point, awesome. But all I know is that this guy resonated with the players. This guy resonated with the country. He said all the right things, and his team made it and should have won the third place game at a Copa. So I like, forgive me about caring at all about what had happened at Leeds or anywhere else. It's like, what's happening right now with Canada looks pretty damn special. He looks like a perfect fit. They had a bunch of young guys emerge on that stage and handle themselves adequately. Like, everything, the ship being stabilized, getting more money into the program, getting more attention on the youth game and on the younger professionals in this country, the development, the excitement around World Cup, like, all of it has been 10 out of 10 out of 10 out of 10 out of 10. We agree, this has all been unreal. We called it drunken gravy. I got to say, I got two things that I look at and I'm like, this is the one thing that I'm kind of curious about moving forward. Can we do that part?
Yes, because the unintelligent thing to do is, we're good.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
That's not the thing. So go ahead, lay them out.
Okay. So there's two things for me. One is that I still don't think, despite, it was like, I kept seeing graphics of like Jonathan David now has like more goals at Copa or had more goals at Copa than Messi. And I was like, okay, whatever. I don't think that they have enough finish. And I still don't think that it was, despite the couple of goals that he scored, a great tournament for Jonathan David, a player that we were kind of expecting to be one of the faces of this program. Like, that's not how it feels. Like, it actually feels more like the three guys that we were outlining earlier, that there's more reason for optimism there. And then two is, I know Davies got hurt and there are the brilliant runs, but I just don't feel the impact of two guys that are supposed to be the faces of this program consistently enough, like, from game to game. And you can tell me if that's wrong, you can tell me if it's amateurish, but I do feel like if ultimately this program is going to have its highest ceiling of success, and maybe that's what we just saw, right? Like, outplaying a top 15 nation. So maybe they just already did it, but that the formula does need to include slightly better versions of those two players, and whether one is tactic or how much of that is tactics versus ability, I don't know, but that is those are the biggest areas of what I would like to see improve from my vantage point.
Like, I think part of his tactics, like, the Uruguay game confirmed to me, because that was an intense game where guys could have been sent off left and right.
Yeah.
If Richie Larea can make it through that game without being sent off, Richie Larea is your left back.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear it. Johnston on the right, Richie on the left. I respect Larea's game a lot. He's a worker. He's a smart defensive player. I don't like when they play two wing backs and he has all that responsibility. I don't think offensively he's that guy. But if you just keep him in that formation they had Saturday, Larea's the left back. I would move Schaffelberg. However, let me ask you this. Does this midfield sound nice to you? Eustachio, Kone, and Davies. Does that work for you? Because it works for me.
Yeah, I would say, too, I didn't really throw in Eustachio, but I didn't think that it's like, again, as the top three guys, I thought that the top three face guys were all a little, I would say, a little underwhelming.
They were. Eustachio wasn't the best, no doubt about it. But I think it's tactical with Davies.
Mm-hmm.
It is, because we've seen him do some crazy stuff. Jonathan David, I'm worried about. And I am not rooting for this Manchester United move at all. Mm-hmm. I think it will destroy him. You cannot go to that club and be as in and out of the game as he is. He is going to get lit up by the fans and the press. They will have zero patience for him. Zero. Go anywhere else. A little Real Sociedad, a little La Liga, a little Italy, wherever. I don't care. He cannot go to a place that high profile. He can't. Because there's something with his game I'm not seeing. And I'm with you. I like, he scored two goals. That's great. That's great. He should be setting up way more. He should be finishing at least two more chances, minimum.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my worry with David. But my other worry is, like, there's also moments here for other strikers on that bench to take that job from him.
Mm.
And I know they didn't get a ton of chances in the Copa. I understand that. But going forward over the next little while, if I'm Jesse Marsh, I have a conversation with my strikers. And I go, look, who wants it? Because this is killing us. He mentioned that in the post-game speech. He said the goals are going to come, we're going to get smarter. Okay, well, that means you need smarter strikers. Who wants that opportunity? If I was a manager at that level, it would be very simple for me. No one's starting on ceremony.
Mm.
If you score in the last three games, you're my number nine. And we'll play it from there. Right now, there's a lot of ceremony with Jonathan David.
Mm.
And we got to look at that differently. If Jacob Schaffelberg could fight his way into that nine, someone else up front can do it.
Yeah.
And I think we need to have a program. And I think Marsh might be the guy to eventually say to Jonathan David, listen, this isn't Guatemala. And he can't be the guy that stats stuffs against bad teams all the time.
Mm.
You got to show up. So I think between now and 2026, for me personally, other than finding Davey's actual position, it's Jonathan David.
Yeah.
That's the priority. What is he about? Does he want to be our striker that Friday night at BMO Field in June of 2026? It's up to him.
So,
but I don't think it's a fait accompli.
Yeah.
At all.
I'm totally with you. I think that the Davies thing is clear. Like, he's one of the best players on planet Earth. So I don't think that this is a matter of like, oh, does he show up or is he good? It's like, yeah, it's just how do you use him? And I couldn't help but feel too, like when they lose to Uruguay, like the game tying goal, part of it is that he's going up for offense. And I'm like, yeah, man, like you probably, that's a part of his game that I think he wants and that the program's going to have to figure out. Cause there's too many times where they're not creating that space. They're not creating these opportunities for, and he's just like, he is that space creator. He is someone who can get that done. And I need more of that from him, whatever it is. It is strange that it's like we keep having this conversation about the guy or like that is perpetually one of the things. But still, you hope that gets worked out. My only thing when it comes to David is we got a pretty good look at Tani Oluwaseyi. I think that's how you say his name. When it comes to class or finish or touch or patience or, yeah, I kind of saw none of it. I saw a lot of athleticism, but everything else, I was like, man, how he had as many chances as David did.
That header where he missed the net completely, that's unacceptable at that level.
That's what I mean.
Unacceptable.
Like, yeah, this guy, like, he felt like an MLS player out there. That was like Canada had a bunch of guys where I went, oh, this team feels like international players assembled for a real professional, like, unbelievable high-level international team. And when he was playing, I went, oh, you should be playing for, you know, TFC. You should be playing for, I think he's with Minnesota.
There was a bit of that. And also, listen, not to pile on specific guys, where the hell was Kyle Larin in this turn? With respect.
Yeah, where did he go at the end?
I don't know. But, like, I think we've gone through a lot of reps of the David Larin thing up front. It's not working.
Mm.
So, like, I just think there's an opportunity. What I'm curious to see is who takes advantage of that opportunity. Because under Marsh, you're going to get it.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. You are going to get it. So we'll see where that goes. But I think, like, the ability to score a goal once every two games will be the difference between this team out in the group stage or going through in that tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious if someone's going to step up. I'm curious because the opportunity will be there.
Yeah.
But the Copa was, that's why the Copa was great. It was fun, but it still cemented some pretty serious things.
Mm-hmm.
And up front is the glaring one. And we'll see how it plays out.
One of the best things about this tournament is that now there are stakes, right? Like, this is no longer just a team where it's like, we're happy to be there. And wow, everything is a positive. Even just losing, even getting beat down is a positive because we were never there before. It's like, one of the best things about this is that they were so good that you can expect things moving forward. And I think expectation is how you grow. And so I don't have any problem with celebrating the things that happened in this tournament. That's the way that this thing should be looked at. You and I talked about the gravy, but yeah, if you are going to continuously take steps at a program and you have those expectations, you got to look at the things that are going to improve, and those things are it. Last one on this, because I do want to ask you about the Bill Manning firing too, and about like, yeah, what the hell is going on with TFC. But last thing on it, are you like convinced that the Marsh hire is a 10 out of 10? Like, is there, do you have reservations about this? Like, where are you at with Marsh after this tournament?
Oh, it's the perfect fit. It's two partners who are kind of adrift at sea and found each other. I think it's perfect. I think, but going back to your comment earlier about, you know, someone texting you saying, don't get fooled by Marsh.
Yeah.
We haven't seen international Jesse Marsh before. This is brand new. If this is club Jesse Marsh, that's an accurate statement. I don't think that's an accurate statement in this context at all. You know, there's some coaches who love club soccer and excel, and there's others on the other side who they're pretty good at getting teams together 12 times a year and looking good.
Yeah.
So if Marsh is that guy, again, he is telling things to this team that Herdman couldn't sell because he's never done it at certain levels. And this is where the experience of it, I do remember you and I talking when he was hired, and I wasn't 100% gung-ho, but the one thing I did like was he's been in some major leagues.
You liked it more than everybody else. You were...
Oh, is that how it played out? I thought I was kind of down on it a little
no,
bit.
No, you were...
There were elements of it, buddy, I didn't hate.
I was the downer. I looked at it and went, sorry, you had Eric Haula at a lower level, and you won a bunch of games, and then you lost everything else, everywhere else. Like, nightmare. And then the only thing you told me was that at Leeds they called him Ted Lasso, and that made me almost fall out of my chair, like in depression, because I was like, no way we had to borrow money from the MLS teams to hire Ted Lasso. Like, that was a nightmare. No, I'm blown away with the guy. I actually think that, like, he has a lot of the things that make Herdman successful at the tournament stage, which is that, like, he does have the rah-rah that seems to get guys to buy in. Like, he is a real passionate speaker, but he's got a badass streak to him, especially the fact that, like, he played and, you know, people were sending me highlights of him, like, kicking Beckham, like, right in the back, and I went, ooh, yeah, like, he's got an edge. He's an edgy badass who seems to, like, who has played at the high level, who has coached at a high level, who kind of... He's the opposite of me, where he can make his point like concise and strong and doesn't need to be super long-winded and meandering. I think he's nails. I like, as a face of this program, of like what we're trying to accomplish and be, like, it's perfect. He's like, I can't believe how perfect it is, honest to God.
That's a great mix. And like, I'm just comparing him with Herdman. Like, Herdman's biggest claim to fame, aside from getting Canada to a World Cup, which is not nothing. Mm-hmm. I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater here. But Herdman went viral probably the most for the Croatia comment after the first game at the World Cup.
Oh, in terms of incredibly, globally, no question.
Incredibly self-serving, didn't do any good to anyone comment. Jesse Marsh goes out there, I believe it was Saturday, and destroys the entire tournament and the organizers. On behalf of the team, destroys in a way that is like, it wasn't as forceful as Marcelo Bielsa from Uruguay, but it was close. And stuff like that will carry in that room 100%, because all the guys are feeling it. And in the past, if you didn't like the organization of a tournament, you were Canada soccer had other priorities. They didn't care what you thought. Oh, we're going to go in front of the microphone and, sorry, Victor Montagliani is going to rip on something? No. That's not going to happen. No. We're going to go to the party later. Don't worry. Figure it out, guys. Marsh sat there and spent a large amount of time talking about the tournament and Canada's perspective of it, not just others. That stuff matters. It's not just the look at me Herdman thing. That wasn't a look at me moment. That was, we are. I'm going to fight for the team, because in 2026 as a host, I better not see any of this. And I know we're not the States, and I know we're not Mexico, but enough. And I like, it's no different than working the refs and the media ahead of the next playoff game. It's no different. So he's just doing things a little smarter. I don't want to disrespect anyone, but like, it's a different tact, and I like it.
I couldn't agree more. Again, every single time this guy stepped in front of a microphone, I went, this is exactly what I want the coach to represent. Like, it just felt like he was completely in tune with the team, that he said all the right things. I love the second class citizen line. I love that he was fearless, you know, ripping the United States. And it's like normally when your coach talks about those jobs and they go, no, I don't want the, you're like, oh, he's going to take that job, right? Like, or he wants that job. The way he said it was like he burnt the bridge. He scorched earth. I went, oh my God, that's amazing. They were like, what do you think about this? He just went like immediately, like Joker style, blew up the hospital behind him and was like walking away laughing. I was like, hell yes. Like, just took a shot at everybody. I loved it. I think the guy rules. Okay, last thing. Did this experience change your mind about how you're feeling about, the World Cup coming to the city? Because I got to tell you, I follow a thing called, I think it's called Soccer Fights, or I don't, it's a Twitter account like that, and it keeps coming up on my For You page. And it's like
that account's been busy over the last couple of weeks.
Brother, has it ever. I'll tell you, that's basically all I've seen in my algorithm is England fans fighting Netherlands fans, England fans fighting Spanish fans, English fans getting, you know, arrested, Netherlands fans getting arrested. There's a lot of violence. And then there's the same thing. It's like fights in the stands in the Copas, like fights, people climbing through vents, Hard Rock Stadium essentially getting destroyed, players going into the stands and fighting. It was a lot. Like, I kind of thought about where games are being played here and what that part of town is like, Liberty Village, and how condensed it's going to be. And yeah, like I said, I think I would board up if I was a bar owner in Liberty. I think I would just board up.
I mean, I don't know if you have to board up yet.
I don't
know if you got to board up. No, but I like, listen, this Copa in a lot of ways might be the best thing to happen in that World Cup.
God, I hope so. That was my optimist thought too.
Like, this is because, there's two things. One, I think this experience is going to help and open up a lot of eyes, because I guarantee you in Lausanne, Switzerland, at the FIFA headquarters, the most corrupt building in the history of Earth, they're going to have a meeting. The cap's corrupt. Everyone's corrupt. Everybody. Corrupt gravy. It's all corrupt.
Yeah, that's a lot of corruption.
But they're going to have some meetings about this. But, like, with respect, FIFA are way scarier than the South American Soccer Federation. FIFA are the ones who went into a Brazilian rainforest, built a stadium for three games and left. They just left.
Yeah.
They moved around heaven and earth in Brazil to make it look like a certain way.
Yeah.
They will do whatever they want it. They have to do to make sure that stuff doesn't happen. You see that stuff at like a final 3 years ago in London between Italy and England. You see that stuff in the Copa America in the States when they have no idea what proper security organization looks like, because you don't have to deal with that stuff in any consistent way. FIFA never really has that stuff happen. Why? Because they are ruthless with their you-know-what. I have no concerns about the 2026 tournament having to deal with stuff like we saw over the last few days, because FIFA won't allow it. FIFA's going to get the Gardner Expressway open for 2 weeks. That's their pull. Do you think they're going to have people going through vents like Mission Impossible to get to a seat at Hard Rock Stadium last night? They're not going to let that happen. That's a joke what happened. I guarantee you that will not be the vision of 2026.
God, I hope
I think
that.
Liberty Village businesses should feel safe.
Okay, good.
In that knowledge. Yes. Stay safe.
Now, by the way, clip, we got to clip that. That's good. That's clip. We're going to have to play that. I'm going to have to use that like as a mantra when I meditate, like before the event, before, like as it gets closer and closer. It's insane that. Because, yeah, again, all the violence that I saw over the last couple of weeks, and frankly, just the rage I felt being at bars with other sports fans. Like, I genuinely wondered. I was like, I kind of think soccer should be illegal. Like, I don't think we should allow it anymore. I think
banning soccer.
Yeah, like, I just don't. I don't. I think if you were, you know what would, who would win a Nobel Peace Prize 100% is a global dictator who bans soccer. Like, you do that, you win Nobel Peace Prize. Yeah. Like, there's no doubt about it. There's doubt about it. You might be the greatest Nobel Peace Prize winner of all time.
It was shocking, though, what went on down there for that Copa.
Dude, it was like abhorrent.
Because it was so amazing. Because, like, I just read a few days before the Uruguay-Colombia game where the game was. I'm like, Charlotte, North Carolina. Who the hell is showing up in Charlotte, North Carolina to watch Uruguay and Colombia? And I could not believe what I was seeing. This was just in the pregame. Place was yellow jerseys.
Yep.
It was not, I don't think they were expecting I think they were expecting more of like the early feel of the Copa, where there's some empty seats, yeah, in like Santa Clara and places like that.
It swung quick.
I think that's,
buddy,
what they were expecting. It snuck on them very fast. Yeah.
It went from those games where it was like, yes, a good portion of the stadium, to that, like, absolute nut house. And holy crap. And you're just looking at these border security guards at the Hard Rock, and they're like, wow, why didn't they do anything? It's like, what were they going to do? They were outmanned, outgunned, out-resourced. Like, there was no hope. But, no, that was terrifying. I just got to, like, that was the kind of thing where, I'm sorry, but I watched that happen and I went, man, I was so excited for World Cup here and I really wanted to go. And I watched that when I went, maybe I don't want to go, you know? And I think that's a bad look for the sport if that is the case. If you got people going, well, I'm not sure I can be safe at a sporting event in North America, that's no bueno.
100%. 100%. Yeah. That's the problem, but I have a feeling FIFA's going
to
figure it out.
God, I hope so. Okay, last thing before you go. I did need to talk to you about Bill Manning. Everybody that's a TFC fan hated this guy for forever. Like, yeah, could not stand him. I think I went to a game 2 years ago and they were chanting for his firing. So, like, this has been a long-ass time coming. Goes under the radar. But here's my thing. They lose to Forge FC, and they control play. I don't give a crap. The payroll discrepancy is $27 million between those two teams. Do you think that TFC can build the brand back up? Like, this was once such an embarrassing brand for a really, really long time. They won a championship. They get to two finals. It felt like they had kind of corrected it. It felt like a brand on the rise. And now it's like, man, they feel more irrelevant than they ever have before. And it's like they lose in embarrassing ways. The goaltender doesn't know where the guy is hiding behind the net. They lose to Forge FC. Like, where do you think this franchise is? And do you think they can ever even reclaim sort of that spot that they once held when they won those titles in the city again? Like, it feels like a broken brand.
I think they can get back there. I think the issue Bill Manning kind of got trapped into was, like, let's remember, in TFC's heyday, it was Bezpachenko and Greg Vanney.
Yeah. Apparently, Bezpachenko, everything he touches turns to gold. He's like the... he's like the MLS god, where just he goes somewhere, he fixes them up, and he builds the team right.
Oh, so he's like the guy that Dubas brought in from the Leafs.
Yeah.
That guy, yeah. you invented hockey, that guy, right. But my point is, like, there was no star power on either of those guys when they took over. Nobody knew who, like, outside of that circle, there wasn't a lot of star power. You bring in Bob Bradley, an overrated mind. You bring in John Herdman, who's his own brand. The managers and the executives and the managers can't be the stars of your team. Mm. They can't. And when they're relatively no names, like Vanney and Bezpachenko, like that's where, like, the focus has to be somewhere else. And I find with certain guys, the focus is on them. Mm. And I think that needs to change. Like, the infrastructure, there needs to be a full autopsy on how Schaffelberg was allowed to leave the organization.
100%.
It's stuff like that.
For cash.
Like when you're stuck in BS internally and you have no time to look at the other stuff, that will happen. And Bill Manning got in a trap where he felt he had to do it. And I don't know why, but he had a lot of cachet, man. You win in this town, you get cachet. And he spent it kind of quick. So I think the stars can't be on the sideline anymore, and the stars can't be up in the press box. Like, that can't be the narrative. And Pelly's in town, so if he doesn't like something, I think it's a very intriguing move for what could possibly come after. Is why I was intrigued. Pelly's moving in, and the chess pieces are being switched around, and we'll see. We'll see where it goes. But I think they can get back there. You just got to be smart, which I haven't been for the last six-ish years or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Sid, thanks for sharing the gravy with me, brother. It was a fun run.
Anytime I want to split some gravy.
Yeah.
At 11:37 at the wedding table.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Thanks for making time, brother. Always appreciate it. All right, Sid Sixero. I always have to catch up with a guy after major soccer news, right? I'm so optimistic about Canada soccer. Like, I couldn't be more excited about the future. I'm already trying to figure out who the dual nationals are that Jesse Marsh is going to try to track down. I want to keep talking about this program. I really believe that they're going to try, at least, hopefully, and listen
to the people that are a part of this and continue to try to develop guys at a younger age. But to me, it's just for them to actually be this exciting, for them to have this kind of exposure, I just don't see how this couldn't be a selling point. What just happened to other top tier players that are thinking about joining this program? They really just finally feel like, man, it's just on track. It's really there. It's really on track. Anyway, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about my nightmare.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
For the ramparts we watch, we're so gallantly streaming. And the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that
honestly, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. You think you could do better? I don't, Mike, did you pick the right one? Like, this seems fine. Like, this doesn't sound as bad as what it sounded like on TV yesterday. Like, she's straining. But I got headphones on. That part stuff. Listen, I forgot this poor girl's name. She's taking on the chin. She's new Fergie, where Ingrid Abdress. What's she from, Mike? Yeah, okay. I don't think it was that bad. There were some really tough moments. I don't think it's the worst. It's a really tough look when you are a singer. And yeah, sports fans are just figuring out who you are. Because I didn't know who Ingrid Engress was until today. And I don't think many of you did either. It's just a tough look. It's just a really, really tough look. But this is kind of America's fault. This is kind of their fault. Who wrote the anthem again? Because it's a hard song to sing. Oh, Canada, easy. What, Francis Scott Keys, right? That's who wrote the Star Spangled. Yeah, there we go. See, I got big brain. Just takes me a second and I can get there. I can unlock it. That song is hard. That's it. It's a hard song to sing. I think he wrote it from like a jail cell. He was singing hard. God. He's hurting times. That song's impossible. It's a terrifying song to sing. If you were ever singing it at a stadium and then all of a sudden they turned all the sound down, you'd sound way worse than her. And I know she's a professional. She's got to do better than that. But yeah, that's my nightmare. That is genuinely, this is why this. I don't have stage fright in terms of public speaking, but I cannot do karaoke for the life of me. Like every single time I'm doing karaoke, I'm in hell because this is all I'm thinking of. This is all I'm thinking of is blowing a note and looking like an idiot. And some of you can just check out on that. Some of you are just having fun. I respect it so much. But I see her and all I feel is the feeling I have at karaoke every single time. The feeling she must have had when she walked off and she saw people like snickering, sneering. I feel so bad. Those four Grammys are not going to be able to block out the demons for the next couple of weeks because she's going to take it on the chin. Hopefully she's got a good sense of humor and she can laugh that one off and just say, hey, had a bad night. She just pulled up with Joe Biden. I had a bad night. Hey, I had a bad night. That's all you got to do. Do the Joe Biden defense. Anyway, subscribe to this podcast. Leave 5 stars. We'll see you tomorrow.